out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, our guest is Barbara Outland Baker, and Barbara was the very first girlfriend of Arnold Schwarzenegger when he got to the United States in 1968. Arnold and Barbara dated from 1969 to 1975, so pretty much the bulk of his bodybuilding career was spent with Barbara, and she lived with him. It was a very serious relationship, and she wanted to get married, and Arnold kept putting her off. And then when Arnold retired from bodybuilding and went off to make Stay Hungry in Birmingham, Alabama, that's when they finally broke up. So anyways, Barbara wrote a book called Arnold and Me. It was published in 2006, and I made friends with Barbara on Facebook, so I asked her if she wanted to come on the show and talk about the book. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about her long relationship with Arnold Schwarzenegger when he first came to America. So it's going to be very, very interesting. All right, before we get to our interview with Barbara, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. And tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. They will give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll also give you 20% off your first order. And they are opening up offices all over the United States, Las Vegas, Texas, Chicago. So call them up and maybe they have one in your area. If not, they can work with anybody in the continental United States. You don't have to be in Tampa. All right. So how are you guys doing? We missed our podcast last week because we had a few last minute cancellations and I was out of town last week. So I wanted to get a few interviews done before I went away. And then it was just bad timing. Everybody canceled at once. And then I didn't have time to reschedule before I went away for the week. So we were not able to get our interview up before last week. So I interviewed Barbara early last week, I think last Tuesday. So we were able to get that one up for this week. So that's the way it goes sometimes. Unfortunately, we very rarely miss a week, but we did miss one last week. I got some emails here I want to read from you guys about our last podcast, which was the one we did with Ed Connors and Rich Gaspari and Jay Cutler. We got some good feedback from that, and I put that up on my YouTube page as well. I don't know if you're following me on my YouTube page, but last week I put a couple of new videos up for my bodybuilding history series. What I'm doing is I'm covering one contest from the past in bodybuilding, and I cover it in detail, and I put a lot of videos and pictures in there. So they're really, really cool. They're getting some good feedback. So last week I did the 1967 Mr. Olympia, the first one that Sergio won, because I've already done 65 and 66. And I also covered in another video the 1968 NABBA Mr. Universe, which was the first professional win at the NABBA Universe by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold was 21 years old that year. That was the year he showed up. If you remember seeing the pictures, he was very bulky, very white, no tan. And 1 week after that is the contest where he got defeated by Frank Zane at the IFBB Mr. Universe in Miami. So I covered actually both of them. I covered first the NABBA Universe, where Arnold won the pro and Dennis Tinarino won the amateur. And then I went over and covered the 68 IFBB Universe, where Frank Zane beat Arnold. Of course, that was a very historic event. So, yeah, check those out. Check those out at my YouTube page. You can subscribe to my YouTube page. It's under my name, John Hansen. And I'm putting probably two of those up every week. So they're really cool. I like doing them. and I'm getting some really good feedback from that. All right, I'm getting ready for my hernia surgery. If you guys remember last year, if you used to listen to the podcast last year, I had a hernia surgery. I had what they call a ventral hernia, which is in the front part of your body, right in between the abdominal muscles. So it's like a tear to the fascia in between the abdominals. It's a real small hernia. It's no big deal. It's not hurting me health-wise at all. It's just, like, I guess, a cosmetic thing. You could see it. So I went in last year, last August 15th, to get it fixed, and they just stitched it up. And apparently that was not enough because it came back. It's in the exact same spot. So they're going to do it again, and this time they're going in with a robot, I guess, and they're going to fix it with mesh. So I'm getting that done September 2nd, which is the first week in September, on that Wednesday. And then I will be off work for a couple of weeks. So maybe I'll get a few more videos done in the process when I'm home. And I have to not train at all. I can't go to the gym for 6 weeks, just like last year. So I'm a little bit leaner this year because I don't want to get as fat. Last year I was kind of bulked up when I had the surgery. And then, of course, not doing anything for 6 weeks, you inevitably get a little fatter. So I'm a little bit leaner this time, so it should be not as bad. Looking forward to getting it over with, and hopefully it'll be successful this time. And I'll have that 6 week break afterwards, which I'm really not looking forward to, but it'll probably do my body some good. Let's see, contest news. We've got, I think I mentioned this before, the New York Pro is going to be held in Tampa this year, and that'll be right after my surgery on the, was it the 5th? Yeah, the 5th of September. So that's coming up next weekend, actually. And I'm supposed to go to watch it for Dave Palumbo's RX Muscles, so I'll be there. And they also moved the Masters Nationals, which is always in Pittsburgh. They moved that to Orlando. So I guess Florida's a state, if you want to have a bodybuilding contest, where they're going to move all the contests. But the Olympia is still supposed to be in Vegas, but it's not until December 16th, so the very end of the year. So hopefully that'll still take place. What else is going on? Before I get to our videos, I did see something about Chris Dickerson. I know I get a lot of emails and questions from you guys regarding Chris Dickerson and how he's doing. Bill Pearl on his Facebook page this week printed an address where you can contact Chris. So let me read that. Yeah, this is in regards to Chris's birthday, which is actually tomorrow on the 25th of August. It says, as many of you know, Chris Dickerson fell at his home on March of 2020. Wow, I didn't realize it was way back in March. And he suffered a fractured hip. After surgery, he experienced a massive heart attack, and he was put on a ventilator in the ICU. Following several days and failed attempts to bring him off the device, he received a pacemaker. Surviving this, Chris was moved to a care facility for rehabilitation, where unfortunately he contracted COVID-19. Again, he won another life-threatening battle. Proudly, on August 25th, 2020, Chris plans to celebrate his 81st birthday. Please help us wish him a best of good wishes for that memorable day and going forward. If you would care to drop him a note, his current address is Chris Dickerson, Manor Pines, 1701 Northeast 26th Street, room 367, Wilton Manor, Florida, 33305. I'll say that for you guys one more time. You could just write it down. Manor Pines, 1701 Northeast 26th Street, room 367, Wilton Manor, Florida, 33305. It says he cannot receive visitors or phone calls. So that would be the only way we could get a hold of him. So I'm going to send him a birthday card this week just to let him know that we're thinking of him. So if you guys want to do that, I'm sure he would really appreciate that. Chris is a great guy, and we've had him on the show a few times, and I'm sure he'll feel a little better getting so many well wishes from his fans out there. All right. Let me read some of these emails we got regarding the last show we did and some other random emails. If you guys want to email me, you can do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I got an email here from Lee Baptiste. He said, hi, John. I hope all is well. I just want to say I love the Earl Menard interview. The guy sounds like he's so young, full of energy, really great. Also, I love the Jay Cutler-Gaspari interview. Maybe you can make this a monthly series out of getting guys who lived in the house to talk about their experiences. I think that would be a cool expansion to the show. In terms of guests, I've always asked you for Rick Wayne. I hope you get him. But after interviewing Earl and discussing movies, I was thinking Ralph Mueller I think he would be interesting from his bodybuilding days to movies with Arnold, etc. Sven Ole Thorsen would also be another great guest. Keep up the great work, John. Lee Baptiste. Yeah, I've tried, actually, I think, Ralph. I've definitely tried Sven because I'm friends with him on Facebook. But Sven does not answer my emails. But he always likes my stuff on my Facebook page, so that's weird. And Rick Wayne, keep your fingers crossed. We're still holding out hope for Rick Wayne. Mark Johnson said, hey, John. And Mark is on my fitness challenge that I have going on my John Hanson Fitness website. We started a fitness challenge, which is a 12-week transformation program. We're doing it for the summer, and it ends on Labor Day. So Labor Day is on September 7th, so we've got two more weeks left. So we've been running it for 10 weeks already. And Mark, who is a big fan of the show and is one of our Patreon donors, so thank you for that, Mark. Mark joined the transformation program. It's called the Summer Fitness Challenge, and I'm going to be doing another one for the fall. So if you guys are interested in doing that, go to johnhansonfitness.com and check that out. It'll probably be I'm thinking like the third week in September. So as I want to time it where it'll be over with before Christmas, because I know nobody's going to diet on Christmas. But we might go over Thanksgiving, but maybe we'll have a cheat day on that. We'll allow a cheat day on Thanksgiving. But it'll run from probably late September through late December, right before Christmas. So anyways, Mark sent me an email and he said, hey, John, I have to say that this summer fitness challenge is the best thing I ever could have done. Somehow, once we hit week 8, I started to notice some awesome changes in my physique. Now, instead of having this horrible blob of fat around my midsection, I can actually see the remaining fat that I need to get rid of. It's such an awesome feeling. And I can't believe I'm still eating the same meal plan from week 1. John, you are a genius. I also have to tell you that I thought I would be craving so many bad foods throughout these weeks, but I actually feel as if I lost the desire to eat anything that's going to hurt my progress. In the past few days, I've gotten down to 145 pounds, which is the lowest I've ever gotten on my own. So I'm super fired up to go even lower and really get that waist down in these last 3 weeks. If there's anything else I can do, just let me know. Thanks for everything and all the help. I hope you enjoyed your week off from work. Thanks, Mark Johnston. Yeah, it's amazing when you follow these diets. And I always tell people when I put them on a diet, whether it was for our transformation contest or if somebody is working with me on a diet and exercise plan, which I offer those on my website as well, I always try to tell people, just try to stay with it for the first 2 weeks. 14 days, do everything perfect. Follow the diet, do the training, don't cheat. Just stick with it for 14 days. If you can do that first 2 weeks, you get over the cravings, you get into the whole routine of eating 5-6 meals a day, which a lot of people aren't used to doing. You get used to eating those meals on time. And once you do that for 2 weeks, it seems like your body really knows that, okay, you're serious about this. You're doing it consistently. And then it starts to make changes. And as Mark said, after 8 weeks, he really could see the difference. And sometimes even the first month, even if you lose it, an inch or two off your waist in the first month, you really can't see the difference. And like Mark said, he gets to week 8 now, and he's able to see the changes where the body fat is getting so low. Now he can actually see his physique, and he can see how much fat he has left to lose. And you can see that progress. And when you can actually see the physique you're trying to build, that's when you can really get motivated. And like Mark says, he doesn't even want to cheat now because he's getting so close. So congratulations to Mark, and congratulations to most of my clients who are on this. Almost everybody who signed up this time is really sticking with it. And each week they're sending me their measurements of their waist and also their weight. So I'm able to track their progress. And if they're not making any progress, I can try to change their diet or their workouts to help get them going, because it's inevitable. Whenever you follow a diet where you're trying to get your body fat down, it's inevitable that you're going to run into sticking points with everybody. Everybody goes through that. Nobody, it's never perfect for anybody. There's no diet or no transformation program that's perfect. You always have ups and downs. So that's why I'm here, to help coach them and help them get past that. All right, I got another email here from Adam Muza. Adam says, hey, John, keep up the great work. Your show is awesome. I really enjoyed the last podcast with Jay Rich and Ed Connors, especially the dynamic between Jay and Rich. And I was thinking it would be an interesting concept to have a bodybuilder who was coming into the scene paired up with one who was established, and let them talk about the differences in their respective approaches and generations. Another interesting guest would be Bev Francis, maybe even with Steve Weinberger as well. Anyway, great stuff as usual. Thanks for the content. And Dan Falcone emailed me and he said, hey, greetings, John. I enjoy your great videos. I watch them on YouTube. Just a humble suggestion, legends to interview, Bob Guida, PhD, Mr. America, Ellington Darden, PhD, who worked with Arthur Jones, Jim Haslop, who's in your neighborhood, Bill Pearl, if possible, Don Howarth, Mr. Universe, and Steve Davis, legendary West Coast. John, keep up the great work. I'm of the 60s and 50s era. Vest, Dan Falcone. Yeah, those are some great suggestions. Bob, I did interview probably a year or two ago. I did an interview with Bob and Al Yakich and Terry Strand, who are his buddies from Chicago. And we talked mostly about Chicago bodybuilding and the early days with Sergio Oliva. So check that out on my podcast. If you go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, my website, I have all my podcasts and all my videos on there. So if you're having trouble finding anything, you can just search through there. I've got a page for the video interviews, and I've got a page for the podcast. Ellington Darden, I don't know where to get a hold of him, but I'd love to interview him. Jim Haslop does live in Tampa, but he does not want to do an interview. I've tried before with him. I've actually tried for the last couple of years, so I will keep trying. Bill Pearl, it might be possible to talk to him. I'm talking to somebody that knows him, and I know Bill's 89. He'll be 90 this year. He does have Parkinson's, which he's suffering through, so I know he doesn't want to make any public appearances anymore. But I think he's still there as far as he's very mentally alert, and he's still contributing to his Facebook page if he's the one doing that. So I think Bill is still capable of doing an interview, so hopefully we can get him. That would be wonderful if I could talk to Bill. Don Howarth and Steve Davis, I did interview both of those guys as well before, and those are also on my podcast. Also, if you listen to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, if you could go on there and leave a review, that would be great. If you could rate our show and give it 5 stars, that would be awesome. All right. And I did have some emails here, or comments, I should say, on my YouTube page under our Ed Connors, Rich Gaspari, Jay Cutler video. The Son of Krypton said, I want to like this video a million times. It's a crime against bodybuilding that this channel doesn't have 100,000 subscribers. Humanity needs to work harder. Jeff Scammon, my friend, said, awesome interview. What a great way to bring different generations together. The Iron Force said, I barely hung in. The audio was hard to get through. Great episode otherwise. Very cool to hear the different stories from both generations. Talk about Ed and what he's done for them. The man is so important to our bodybuilding community. Yeah, we did have some problems with the audio. I think that was coming from Jay's phone. It seemed like he wasn't using headphones or something. That's what someone told me who knows about the stuff. So it seemed like every time Jay was being interviewed, we did have some pretty bad feedback. So sorry about that. Pure Iron said, Jay still has the size. Imagine him making one last appearance on stage at the Mr. O. Howard said, that was great, John. Thanks for getting these guys together. How about an interview with Phil Hill? I remember Phil saying at a seminar that he knew where Rich Gaspari bought his cuts of meat, and that's where he got his. I wonder what he's doing nowadays. Yeah, I've tried to reach Phil on Facebook as well, but he's not answering my emails. I don't know if he doesn't go on Facebook, but I am friends with him on Facebook. He's just not answering my messages to him. Matt and Chetty said, after the Ed interview, John did mention he would try to get some of these bodybuilders who had stayed at Ed's house together for a chat. I didn't think he would be able to get them together for a discussion. What a treat. Thanks, John. Bradford said, awesome interview. Are you planning on getting Matt Mendenhall on Legends of Bodybuilding? Ed helped him out as well. Yes, I've emailed Matt several times, but haven't heard back from him either. George said, Ed Connors is one great success story. It must have been wonderful days back in the 80s. Imagine the time he invested in his business back in them days, Ed having 2 jobs. Patrick said, wow, that was great. Ronan said, guys doing repeat interviews with the podcast and interviewees like Jay just show what a great job John does interviewing. Andrew said, can Rich's voice get any deeper? Jason said, Cutler's arms are huge. And then a couple comments about the sound quality. Really bad sound quality and fixed sound, please. All right. Yeah, that happens sometimes, guys. Sorry about that. All right. So that's the emails I got. Like I said, if you guys want to email me, just go to naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to read your emails on the air. And now here is our interview with Barbara Outland Baker, a very personable lady. I was very happy to talk to her. She wrote a book called Arnold and Me, and we're going to talk about Barbara's relationship with the great Arnold Schwarzenegger. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me this week, Miss Barbara Outland Baker, who wrote the book Arnold and Me back in 2006. So we've got her on the show to talk about the book and about her relationship with Arnold way back in the 60s. How you doing, Barbara?
I'm doing great. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. I was just saying I really enjoyed your book when it came out. It's really an insight into Arnold and, you know, all of us in the bodybuilding world, we sort of idolized Arnold as our hero and everything from what we read in the magazines and seen in Pumping Iron. But, you know, reading your book gave us a real different perspective because you had a real life relationship with him for many, many years when he first arrived in this country.
Yeah, that's right. And so many people have given me that feedback. It's like, this is so personal. I just can be there. And it was like reading a novel where their characters come alive.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really fascinating, too, because, you know, we know Arnold as this really driven bodybuilder who was the king of bodybuilding. And we saw that in the movie Pumping Iron, and we saw his personality and stuff. And you alluded to all that. And one of the things I really thought was interesting in the book was really how driven Arnold was and how every July 1st he would make up his list of goals. And that was really kind of motivating for me to read that again.
Yeah, he was, as I've said, he was just the most goal-oriented person I have ever known.
Yeah.
And he really accomplished every single thing he wrote down. And then on top of that, he accomplished things that he never would have thought because of all of that. You know, it got him to a different level.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, let's start at the beginning. You were born in San Marino, California, right?
Yes.
And you were working at Zucchi's Delicatessen in, I believe it was July of, was it 69 or 68?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, 69,
okay. And then he came in, Arnold came in with Robert Kennedy, which I totally forgot about that until I read your book again. That was the publisher of Muscle Mag International. And I forgot
right.
You and Arnold were old friends. So They came in together, and Arnold kind of hit on you. He asked you for your number.
Well, yes. Apparently, he had seen me other times he had come in. I just saw kind of a big lug. I never gave him a second thought. But this time, he came over to the counter where I was, of course, eating like probably a hamburger and French fries. And he just had a very funny line to ask me for my phone number. And it's like, oh, do I do this? Well, it is my last college summer of college. So,
right.
You know, I decided to give it to him.
So did you know anything about bodybuilding back then? Probably not, right?
Oh, no. In fact, I had seen a bodybuilder in Long Beach. That would have been after my high school graduation.
Okay.
So all of my childhood girlfriends were on the beach in Long Beach. And by now, what I know a bodybuilder to be, this guy was pretty skinny, but he definitely had muscles. And we just stared at him and laughed at him and joked about him. So I didn't know. I was just completely naive. And in a way, that's kind of why Arnold preferred me to gawking at him, because I really loved him for who he was.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought it was interesting also your first date, because that happened on the day the astronauts went to the moon for the first time.
Yeah, really. I mean, what's the timing of that one?
Right.
So he arrived and I was watching the television. I said, come on in. And of course he was late. He got lost. And it's like, it doesn't matter. You know, just come on in and we watched the moon landing together. It was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. What did he think about that, being an immigrant to the country?
Oh, you can imagine. I mean, just the technology and the adventure and the accomplishment and the engineering, he saw all of it, and he was very impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've always read, you know, when Arnold said he was growing up in Austria, he was fascinated by America and he couldn't wait to get here. So that was pretty wild that, you know, right when he got here, that's when we arrived on the moon.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he'd gotten here, do I recall, even a year earlier.
68.
From
right.
Joe Weider. And so he knew this and that, but it was really interesting for him to meet a woman who was kind of current event oriented and collegiately oriented. And so he just loved having our conversations. And, you know, I could tell him about everything from music to culture.
Yeah, yeah. So you guys dated that first summer, and then you went away to college, right?
Yes, only to San Diego State. So it was only 2 hours away.
Okay.
But I went away really essentially broken up from him because we just had a disagreement about sexual mores. And so I was devastated. I was just, you know, it was either my values and morals or him.
Yeah.
And so I chose my essence, but I missed him so horribly. And obviously we got past it.
Right. So what was it about you, Barbara, that attracted you to Arnold? Was it he was just different than everyone else? It wasn't just because he was a bodybuilder. It was just he was so unique, right?
Yeah, he was absolutely unique. And it's not that I didn't like muscles. I just didn't know about muscles. But once I looked at who was in front of me and saw the structure of his body, it was aesthetic to me. And eventually when I went to see the David Michelangelo's David in Italy, it's like, okay, I mean, Arnold's even more beautiful. So I really converted to see that if you do structure correctly, like Frank Zane, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So there was that. And then, because of the physical strength, I think what I saw was an equal internal mental strength. He was hysterically funny. And, you know, he really didn't speak very much English. So when he would swear in English, it was, to me, it just like, as we used to say in the day, it cracked me up, you know. It was really funny to hear him swear. And he just was, you know, good-natured.
Yeah.
He was well-rounded. He wasn't like the muscle thug who didn't have any other conversations besides barbells. He was really a very interesting and intelligent man. Well, he is.
Yeah. Now, back then when you guys were first dating that first summer, did he reveal to you what his plan was? I mean, what did he say he was doing as far as his life was concerned?
Yeah. Well, it came out as he kind of revealed himself. I don't know. Again, I mean, he achieved heights that even to him, it would not have been possible.
Right.
But I knew that life would go beyond bodybuilding. And so that was our beginning in 69. And then what, 75, I think? That's when he made Stay Hungry.
Yeah.
I might be a little rusty on my ears, but
yeah, yeah.
And so I thought, okay, well, is he going to finally calm down from bodybuilding and then we can finally get married?
Mm-hmm.
And then I could see that, no, this is just going to be a brand new career.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be second fiddle again. And anyway, that was at the time that we finally broke up because I just knew that what my dreams were not his dreams.
Yeah. So when you were going to college in San Diego, he was living in LA area, like Venice, Santa Monica. And
right.
he would bring you in every weekend, right? He would fly you in and you guys could spend the weekend together when you were dating.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, he flew me up and it was just very exciting, you know.
Yeah.
Going to the airport and I'd have my sorority sister roommate drop me off and she'd pick me up, you know, on Sunday night. And it was just like high culture for me, you know. It was like, wow, this is amazing that a boyfriend is willing to pay for my round trip.
Yeah. And also at that time, wasn't Franco living with him? So he had along with him and Franco, right?
Right. Yeah, pretty soon on, we went to the airport to pick him up. I mean, it was that summer.
Yeah.
So I'd only known Arnold, I don't know, I'll say a month before Franco arrived.
Oh, okay. So it was real quick. Yeah.
Really, really a quick turnaround. I mean, Arnold had been here a year and he talked Joe Weider into saying, look, I need a training partner. And so Joe was not an easy businessman, but Arnold absolutely knew how to negotiate and get what he wanted, and he wanted Franco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the really interesting things I thought was in the book was how you were kind of delving into Arnold's childhood. And did you go back to his office when he was governor and you were interviewing him a little bit and you were talking about his dad and stuff?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right.
And then you were slowly like figuring out how his relationship with his father was and also with his brother. And you said that when he moved to America, he kind of replaced those people in his life with Joe Weider was like the new father figure and Franco was like the new brother. And so you could see that happening, right? Even before you really knew his origins.
Right. I mean, I wasn't as keen psychologically as I grew over time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Joe completed that picture to say that I was really, I was his mother, you know. So he replicated his family in his choice.
Yeah.
And then he continued to have father figures. And he's just so close with guy friends that, I mean, certainly you can't compete with Franco. That was just definitely his best friend.
Yeah.
But he has always had very close friends, whether they're Germans or, well, bodybuilders of all types and, you know, nationally.
Mm-hmm.
So he did recreate what he lacked in his childhood.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really interesting. Was Arnold forthcoming in telling you about his relationship with his dad when you guys were first dating, or did that take a while to get into that?
You know, initially it was just, I don't even need to talk about him.
Yeah.
There was nothing there. So he was pretty dismissive. And then of his brother, he said, you know, we just weren't close. So I care for his girlfriend, Erica. And then at that point, I think within a year. So Patrick must have been born already, his nephew.
Right.
And he always loved Patrick from the get-go of having met him. And I think we went over there, you know, 2 years into our relationship.
Yeah.
And Patrick was just one adorable blonde. You can't have a cuter kid.
Right.
And Erica was just the sweetest thing, but she had lost her boyfriend to a car accident. And that was that. I mean, she was not even a widow because they hadn't been married, but you really felt for her that she had lost the boyfriend.
Yeah.
And the father of her son.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the interesting parts of your book, too, was when Arnold came back from his trip and he hurt his knee. It was on crutches. And he came to your apartment. And I think you were really hoping for a reunion between the two of you because he was gone for a while and you were looking forward to getting married. And he was very pensive during dinner. And then at the end of dinner, he just said, my father died.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have good reading comprehension. Yeah. It was like, okay, here I am expecting like an engagement proposal.
Yeah.
And I'm here. Boom. After dinner, you just happened to tell me that. Very solemnly. I mean, even though he didn't have a close relationship with his father, you can't deliver that news without just feeling some real sadness.
Yeah.
And so he did show that. But as you know, in reading the book, he was training. And of course, at that point, training was just like everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't understand the compassion that he would now, that his mother was kind of alone, you know? I mean, yeah. Erica was there, but his mother, I think she had, you know, distant relatives. She had a family around her, but not her son, and already her other son had died.
Yeah.
But he didn't go back, and I'm sure that is one regret he still has.
Yeah, well, that dinner, right, you got really mad at him, and you were yelling at him because he didn't show any compassion for, like, his father dying. He didn't, like, show any emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And he just left, and then the next day he called, and I think he tried to explain it to you, right?
Yes. I mean, this was how it kind of went, you know, that he would regroup, and he would think back on what I'd said to him. And it's like, you know, it's not like a normal relationship. I mean, I love my father deep down, but, you know, he preferred Meinhardt over me. That was his brother. Mm-hmm. And always set up a competition between the two boys, whether it was picking a handful of flowers and how big is it? Okay, Meinhardt won again.
Yeah, right.
So he just always felt like, okay, I'm down again. I'm down again. Hmm. And so I think really now he sees the advantage to all of that, that it made him a driver,
yeah.
that it got him out of Austria, into Germany, into the United States. And he really just has that drive that we all recognize totally.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how, you know, those initial things with his father and his brother drove him so much, because that, mm-hmm. that's what, you know, in the bodybuilding community, that's what we've always admired about Arnold, was how driven he was, how much of a winner he was, how he would win at all costs, even if he had to psych out his opponents or whatever. But it was amazing that that was the initial thing, was his relationship with his dad and the way his dad preferred his brother over him. And mm-hmm. it drove him to such extent where he just, for years, I mean, it wasn't just a short-term thing. It was for years he drove himself that hard to be the winner.
Right. And one thing that really always stunned me is after he would win every year, mm-hmm. it was like, oh, but wait till next year.
Right.
Like, well, wait a minute. Why don't you just love and appreciate that all of your hard work this year amounted to another title?
Yeah.
No, just wait till next year. So I think that is kind of typical of somebody who strives, that you don't live in the moment of now and you don't get it. This yeah. moment now, I just won. Well, who cares? I'm living into the future again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all change as we mature, but that was definitely a driver at that point.
Yeah. I've interviewed a lot of bodybuilders, and it seems like that's a common theme with a lot of them, is they don't appreciate the win when it happens. You know, they're always like thinking about the next time.
Right.
Just enjoy that. And then years later when they get older, they're like, wow, I really would have wished I would have enjoyed that when I was at my peak and I was looking so good. I just wish
right.
I would have enjoyed that victory, you know?
I mean, it's so special.
Yeah, yeah.
You competed and you were looked upon by millions and you don't get it?
Yeah.
No, next year. And Frank Zane, again, I mentioned him again, he was a psychologist and a Buddhist in his heart.
Yeah.
And he really had studied that most bodybuilders had a bad relationship with their father.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you might have met the same pattern when you interviewed winners.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's going to be next time. I'm going to prove, and maybe to the father or who knows what, but, you know, it's the old kicking the sand in the face, you know, that yeah. they really need to prove themselves, and yet they don't get that they just proved themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting that a lot of bodybuilders had bad relationships with their fathers, or they long for their father's attention, and the way they build them, they literally build themselves up more masculine in order to get
right.
approval, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
And Mitz from Hawaii, he also was telling you that too, right? That Arnold's relationship with his father is what really was the driving force in his life.
Right, exactly. And Mitz was another father figure. And
right.
Dot.
Right.
They were just a beautiful Hawaiian couple. And
yeah.
he met them over, you know, through a bodybuilding, like little, not a contest, but an exhibition.
Exhibition, yeah. The one him and Dave Draper went out. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Did Arnold ever talk about the competitions he was in? Because you were with him during his real, like pretty much his whole career, from when he got here in 68 all the way up until 75 when he retired. So did he ever talk about like Sergio Oliva or some of these other guys that he was going up against?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was that typical almost teenager-like gossip of, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to beat him and, you know, all of that. Now, he loved the local guys at Gold's, but let's face it, even with Franco, they had a competition of how many reps they could do, you know. So they had a loving, you know, fake fighting relationship. And
yeah.
he was the same way with Louis Ferrigno or Now, there was East Coast versus West Coast, and right. So all of you bodybuilders probably know that. And, you know, his core was bodybuilders. And he loved them, but he wanted to beat them.
Yeah, yeah. You did mention also in the book when he went over to London, he competed against Reg Park. And you asked him about that, right? Because that really was upsetting that he beat his idol, right?
I know. Yeah. I don't think, again, he didn't have the depth of emotion to really feel it and therefore express it. But he just said it was weird. It was weird. Well, okay, weird, weird, doesn't really say how much that, how would it feel to beat your idol, the one who absolutely motivated you to do this sport, and you beat him?
Yeah. Yeah, and they were friends, too, before that.
And after that,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Arnold's feeling was, why did he have to do this? Why do they have to compete? You know, why do I have to beat him, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
So let's talk about later on when Arnold decides to get into, well, he eventually became more and more famous, right? Because you met Charles Gaines and George Butler, and then they decided mm-hmm. to pumping iron. What did you think of those two guys when you met them? Because they were from a whole different world, right?
Oh, they were. They were East Coast, and they really thought that everybody from California was just on the lowest line of the totem pole, and that they were the elite.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, that's how we saw them, is that they were the elite. So Charles was from the South, and like Birmingham, and that's where he said, stay hungry.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he ended up moving way north on the East Coast. And then George was from, I can't remember, but New Hampshire? Yeah.
Yeah, I think New Hampshire. Hampshire. Right, you're right.
And so they just had a whole different edge on things, and they saw bodybuilding as this weird, surreality of, wow, I mean, you're dedicating your life to building muscles,
mm-hmm.
but they set it in a real estate setting and made a good story. Well, that was Charles. No. Yeah. George wasn't the writer. He was the photographer.
Right.
And so, yeah, I liked them, and it was a wonderful time. Every time they came out, it was just really beautiful. Now, here's an example of how backwards we were in California. I couldn't have imagined their budget. I mean, Arnold was on a budget. I was on a starving student budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of maintained that mentality because at that point I was either going to school to become a teacher, or I finally became a teacher. So okay. I didn't have really disposable money. So I presumed that they didn't either. And so we set them up in a Venice Beach hotel. And so immediately when they checked in, they checked out and went to a more posh hotel in like Marina Del Rey or something. It's like, right. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah, and you said there was an interesting story in there when I think you guys went to New York in 73 for the Mr. Olympia. And you said that was one of the few contests you went to with Arnold, right? You only saw him.
Right.
Yeah. And I liked how you guys were going out to all these different places. Like you went to Brooklyn, I think, to see, was it Artie Zeller's family?
Art Zeller's mom. And
yeah.
So, yeah, we really got around, and then we went to fancy restaurants, and
right.
we stayed in I think Hemingway had been famous for staying there.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember. I just read that this weekend. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said that
it was very exciting for me because of my literate background and just, it's not the New York it is today.
Right.
It was the New York of then. And it was just so exciting.
Yeah. And you said the people there were very high class, but Arnold, with his self-confidence, he didn't let it get to him at all. He was still having a good time. And
you know, how can you have so much confidence? He just didn't care.
Right.
And now, inside, maybe, was he covering up and bluffing it? But I just don't think so.
Right. And he was always like that, right, Barbara, from the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we met, he was just, like, really confident to meet, you know, a kind of, in his mind, an upper-class girl.
And yeah.
Forget that I'm a country bumpkin from Austria. He didn't right. care.
Right.
He just had so much confidence in his personality and his wit and his potential. I think that's maybe. Well, I know that working out in a gym, and you probably can relate to it, that you mm-hmm. it just gives you a confidence to have mastery of your body.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that then. I mean, I just came from a Pilates class just now. So I know now what it's like to have more of a mastery over my body than I did then. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's what gave him such utter confidence.
Yeah, that's really what separated Arnold, I think, from a lot of other bodybuilders. Was I think a lot of bodybuilders, they build up this wall of muscle, you know, to feel more secure, but inside they're really insecure. And I mm-hmm. think what happens when you get to these contests, you can see that a lot. But Arnold always had this great confidence in himself. Was he like that when you first met him when he was 22?
Yeah, well, at least the way I could read it from then,
yeah.
He just was always confident of everything he said, everything he did, every purchase that he made. He was totally frugal to save up money for eventually his first, apartment complex where he could live in the manager's apartment.
Okay.
I mean, who does that?
Right.
You know?
Was that a plan of his? Was from the first time you met him? Did he envision that coming up later, or did that?
I think he, you know, because of Joe Weider and even Ben Weider, he was surrounded by very successful businessmen and in the council of that, John Balick. You know, he just learned that you need to invest. And don't care about your immediate gratification. Just invest for the future so right. that you can expand and grow and grow.
Yeah. And then the one business deal that you went into in the book was where he was finally going to come out with his training courses. And the Gene Mose, I think, told you, yeah, the way to do it is you advertise the courses first in the magazine, wait for the money to come in, and then that money pays for the courses, you know, to actually get the courses done.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I was definitely a part of that, but I didn't really understand the whole mechanics of it.
Yeah.
It's like, but Arnold, it's been a year. They're writing you letters. They want their courses. And, you know, he hit upon stumble after stumble after stumble to get each of those books done.
Yeah.
And, the writing of it, the editing of it, the right photographs for it. But
right.
It was just pretty much a nightmare.
Yeah.
But in the end, they kept bringing in money, and most people were pretty patient that it took a year to get the courses.
Yeah. And you helped them around that, right? Because you helped them design a letter that you were writing to all the people and saying, you know, these courses are coming eventually, right?
Right. It's like you have to communicate with these people. You have to explain.
Yeah.
And really, it's amazing how when I met Jack LaLanne later,
yeah.
I related because as a kid, I had bought some gizmo from Jack LaLanne.
Right.
And so I told him when I first met him, I said, you know, what's really funny is that I sent away for blah, 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 and I never got it. Well, why didn't you let me know? I would have sent it to you. And so it was kind of bonding at that point. We really had a very special connection, and I completely forgave him that he didn't send my gizmo.
Right. Yeah. It was great to read through the book how more and more successful Arnold became through the years, right? I mean, he did the mail order courses, and then he was doing the posing exhibitions, and he was getting a lot of money for that back then. And he just led this really great life where he was training, going to the beach, and he didn't work a regular job, and then he would just, you know, travel here. He was traveling all around the world, and
yeah,
you were staying at home, and you were working these menial jobs that you hated, right?
Right. Yeah, no, it was really hard to live two different lifestyles when you're supposedly a couple, you know? And he would go around to Australia and to England and Belgium and back to Austria and Mexico. And it just didn't matter where he'd go, but I'm home. I'm either studying to become a teacher or I'm a teacher.
Right.
And so that was hard because in that age, I really wanted to travel. Now, he'd always bring back beautiful gifts for me. And so it wasn't like he totally forgot me while he was away, but
yeah.
And then he, for doing really nothing, just posing,
right?
Like that's what he does all the time anyway. He got paid,
yeah.
And then in the meantime, the courses were bringing in money, and so all of it was accruing. And he just never looked back. He knew more would be there. Now the Charles Gaines offer to be in the movie, that was a fluke. That he knew, if they'd only known, I would have acted for free. Because really, I mean, that was just a huge opportunity.
That was his ticket, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, remember he'd had that little movie, Hercules, in New York, yeah. Where they changed his name to Arnold Strong.
Right.
And really, that was kind of pathetic.
Yeah.
And so you can't count that as his opportunity.
Yeah.
But here, this was a first-class deal.
Yeah. How did he feel about that? Because you were dating him during that time, right? He went away to New York while you were dating him. Did he think that movie was going to do anything for him, or did he just look at it as a, you know, just a weird opportunity at the time?
No, because, again, of his drive, Steve Reeves had been in movies.
Right.
So I can be in movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I'm going to be in movies.
Yeah.
And I will do a really good job. I will pour my heart into my fiddling lessons, and I know how to do the bodybuilding in the film, and I will take accent removal classes. Well, those didn't work really very well. but he refused to change his name.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He just, again, was back to the confidence game. It's just like, I will rack up one thing after another. And, you know, it's all people. So the networking of the Hollywood industry, he is likable.
Mm-hmm.
So from Rafelson to the directors of Conan, I mean, they just really liked him. They wanted to be around him. And they obviously saw that if they didn't have a script that was, you know, filled with too many words, he could do it.
Yeah. Do you think if right around that time he made Hercules in New York, if somebody would have came up to him and said, I want to offer you like five Hercules movies, you think he would have given up bodybuilding at that time and just did the movies? Or do you think he would have kept going after the bodybuilding?
That's a tough one, because there would have been his dream, but he would have lost out the being the best bodybuilder of all time.
Yeah. And
would he have known that? I mean, the hypotheticals are always hard to answer because you just don't know which way. But he would have loved the opportunity. But I don't know. My sense is he would have continued on and said, I will still have a great body in 5 years. Check with me then.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, Lou Ferrigno kind of faced that opportunity, right? Because he was on the verge of winning the Mr. Olympia. He probably would have won it after Arnold retired. And then they offered him that Incredible Hulk TV show, and he took that.
Right.
That ended up being like, what, 5 or 7 years. And then
right.
By the time that ended, it was too late for him to go back into competition.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder, Lou's like a bodybuilder at heart. I wonder if he sometimes regrets that, you know, if he could have done Mr. Olympia one day, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. It's always about money, because how do you make money as a bodybuilder? It's so costly to eat and to train.
Right.
And so Lou probably made the right decision to the residuals, you know, in his pocket. So I think, you know, we occasionally communicate, and he's happily living in California. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. Bodybuilders aren't the most practical people though. So sometimes, you know,
yeah.
Made the right decision. One thing also in the book that was really interesting was you were really honest about Arnold's personality, how he was such a winning personality and he would love parties and he would kind of make fun of people, but everybody loved it. But then sometimes he would also be insensitive, right? And you had some problems with that with him.
Right. Yeah, there was a streak. I mean, anybody who knows him just knows that there was this just mean streak.
Mm.
And he lacked compassion. I mean, it was in a moment, you know, it. I can't speak to that if he meant it. He just was going for the joke. That yeah. was the important part, is that if I put this person down, or if I tease Barbara that she's just in a bad mood because of her period, mm-hmm. then I can lift myself up because of the joke. I made people laugh.
Right.
And so I just, many, many, many times, I think I might have made a difference in his life to say, you cannot do this. You cannot do this to me. That is not nice. And he finally heard it. But, you know, I know that over his time, he still had that characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
Who does he now? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask, during your time together, did you see him change at all? Did he mature as you got toward the end?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he was the old proverbial, you know, diamond in the rough.
Yeah.
And so he did smooth out. I mean, Reg Park, his idol, would say, you know, thank you for your influence on him. He is definitely way more of a gentleman than he was when I first met him. And
yeah.
So, you know, but I think even now he continues to soften and grow. And I'm sure he's becoming a much softer, kinder, more appreciative man. He's just had too many hardships in life. So that kind of kicks you down a notch and makes you a little bit more compassionate.
Right. Did you show Arnold the book when you finished it to him? You showed him, right, before he wrote the foreword to it.
Well, I physically did not, you know, give him the book, but I think through his office, you know, he had a business person there and I was really close with the secretary at the time. So I probably sent mm-hmm. a book to him and, you know, to this day, do I know if he's ever read it? I'm not so sure, you know, he's never quite admitted that to me.
Well, I think in the foreword he says, you know, I realized after reading some of this that I was insensitive to Barbara many times. And he almost said like he didn't really realize that at the time, you know.
Well, right. I mean, it's like, yeah, but Arnold, I had diaries. So all of this is true.
Yeah.
I mean, that was then. Okay, subjectively, I wrote it in my diary.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what happened then. So as much as you can have an objective book, which is absolutely not possible,
right,
I made it as objective as I possibly could.
Yeah.
And so he definitely was given a summary of the book or he read snippets of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, wow, I can't believe that this is her truth.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So,
well, it sounds like you really made a difference with his relationship with his mother, because after his father died, one of the things you said to him was, what about your mother? You know, she doesn't have a son anymore, Meinhard, and now her husband dies, you know, and I think he said, well, she's with relatives, she'll be fine. And I think you kind of, you know, told him, you need to be there for her now, you know, because mm-hmm. she's the only remaining member of the family.
Right, exactly. It's like, come on, she's a mother. That's her identity, is a mother and a wife. She doesn't have those now because her one living son is in California.
Yeah.
So he started bringing her out to our place. And so, you know, maybe then it was like 3 weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then eventually, I think she came out like 3 months out of every year and stayed with he and Maria.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that was a real loss when he lost her. I think that was, you know, the love of his life.
Yeah. Right. Right. That's tough. When you finally come around to your maturity
mm-hmm.
and you realize all that your parents did for you, even if you can still criticize, you know, especially his father's character, but still they're your parents.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt bad for Arnold last year when Franco died because I know how close they were for so many years. That was his
life. Yeah, I probably felt, you know, I think so. I felt worse with Franco dying than even his mother, you know, because she's older. You know these things happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know Franco was older, but come on, he was kind of like young.
Yeah. I was totally shocked. I think everybody in the bodybuilding world was shocked because we always saw him as just this vibrant personality. And I thought he was going to be one of those guys that was going to live to be 100, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Naturally, he really might have. It's just so weird.
Yeah, it was. It was a shock to everybody.
Yeah.
I remember reading, I think in his book, Arnold's book, that you and your girlfriend were taking these meditation classes or positive thinking classes. And then I got into that also.
Yeah, it was like...
That was in the 70s, right? That was the craze back then?
Right. In the early 70s, well, the Beatles, and they introduced the Maharishi.
Mm-hmm.
And right in UCLA, well, near Westwood, there was a little center. And so we both went there together and learned this meditation. And I found it so interesting that when we got into the car that I said, okay, so what's your mantra? And we're not supposed to tell that to anybody.
Right.
But we found out that we had been given the same mantra. Now, I don't know the game in a larger sense to say that there are very few mantras and this is who they give it to everybody. But I just found it so bonding that we were given that same mantra, you know?
Hmm. So did Arnold get into that too?
Not as much as I did. I think he gave it a try for a week or two. But, you know, it's too passive.
Yeah.
It's not like he's hyperactive. Well, I don't know. Is he hyperactive? Never really thought about that before. He's just doing, but he's not with a hyper state of doing it. But sitting there quietly for 20 minutes and repeating a mantra over and over and over again, I just think that would never be him.
Right. That's more Frank Zane. I know Frank Zane gets him.
Yes. Yeah. Frank meditates. Yeah.
Yeah. So... one of the real problem, I guess, with your relationship with Arnold was the marriage thing, right? You wanted to be traditional and get married, and he kept putting it off.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he found one beautiful excuse after the other. Why? We have the best relationships that we could possibly have, so why would you want to change it? And it's like, well, because I want children. I don't want children out of wedlock. And anyway, it was always the same thing. Not now, when after the contest. I mean, after, you know, 6 years, it's like, okay, I'm not buying that excuse anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that we finally called it. Like, this is not because of not loving each other, but this is because we are on different paths. So, you know, bye-bye, and we'll be friends.
Yeah.
And, but then... I don't know how long it took for him to meet his next girlfriend, maybe a year. And then they were together a year or two. And then Maria came right in on the step of that. And I think they were together for like another 6 or 7 years before he married her.
Right.
It's like, are you kidding me? You really don't want to marry. Right. But he told me that, you know, some older friend said, you got to have everything in life. You've just got to have an experience of a marriage, experience with children. You just have a full life that's going to make your life better yet. And so it sunk into him. And he thought, okay, I'm doing it.
Yeah, I think that was Jim Lorimer that told him that he needed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he also said that he didn't want to get married until like his father, until he was like almost 40, right?
Right. And so 25. I mean, he wasn't as old as his father. But
38 or something. Yeah. Yeah.
He approached it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So what was the final break?
And why would that be? I mean, why is the role model there your father?
Right.
I mean, I don't know. That was crazy.
Yeah, maybe his father was more of an influence than he would admit to, right?
Yeah, right.
So when did you guys break up then, Barbara? Was it when he went off to make Stay Hungry? Because you realized then, okay, he's not going to stop. You waited for the bodybuilding thing to be over with, and then that finally ended, and now he's off to his next career, his next
battle. Right.
Yeah.
Well, probably about a month or two before my driving him to the airport to film Stay Hungry.
Okay.
We just had the old, you know, call the Jesus moment where it's like, okay. I mean, I could tell the story, but my colleague friends really meant a lot to me because I was finally teaching.
Uh-huh.
And we were in East Los Angeles, and I said, how about, you know, you come to the end of the party with me and we'll just leave from that night to go down to Palm Springs. And I thought it was a good plan. And we went to Palm Springs often. And why would I want to go to a party with your friends? It's like, say that again. And so I kind of got the words out of him again. And it's like, if you don't care about me as a human being, that there is no value in this relationship. And the next week, we were supposed to fly down to Mexico to have a vacation, well, a posing exhibition. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't go. I mean, we broke up. We just said, no, this is going to end with this trip. Now, I continued to live with him until he left. And then I continued to live there for like the 2 months that he was filming in Birmingham.
Okay.
And then I was ready to move out by the time he returned.
Wow.
But we did maintain, I don't even know how over this whole lifetime we have maintained a friendship. To me, that's one of the most staggering things that
I
fathom, you know?
Because that was a 6-year relationship, right?
You're right. And it's very hard to flip that on a dime to just become friends.
Right. Now, when you go out with someone like Arnold, who's so magnetic and he's so charismatic and he's so driven, how was your dating life after that, after you start dating other, like, normal guys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, again, that's the definition of my life. And funnily enough, Arnold was just totally compassionate to my tragic stories because, you know, either they couldn't handle that my former lover had been Arnold. And there was a lot of intimidation with that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then also he was handsome and he was funny and he was intelligent. How do you put that package into somebody?
Right.
So I just, really, you know, I don't even want to go back into my marital life, but a lot of flops.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been married, 27 years now. So, you know, thank goodness this has worked, but it just took a long time to get there.
Right. What did you think when you saw Arnold going into the movies then? And, you know, especially when he did Conan and then he's really getting the superstar status where everybody in the world knows who he is now.
Right. And he was on every billboard. He was on every night talk show.
Oh, yeah.
I could not get rid of him. In fact, my husband kind of referred to him as the booger, you know, it's like, you know, I can't get the booger off of me. You know, he was everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I don't think people quite understand how much he's had to live within me for my whole life because of his fame.
Right.
And maybe at some level I thought, you know, you better keep him in your life because it would be much harder to have him outside of your life and still be surrounded by him everywhere you go.
Yeah. Now, you guys were still friends. Did you feel good for what he was doing, for, you know, for the achievement he was achieving?
For what?
Like, when you saw Arnold achieving all this fame, did you feel good for him? Were you happy for him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've never been someone who, like, has regrets of, if only it had been me. Now, people would put that on me.
Yeah.
Well, if you had been his wife, you would, you know.
Yeah.
So, I was always happy that he was achieving his dreams. And I was curious about it. And I wasn't jealous of it. I just admired that, wow, I mean, yeah. you are like way beyond right. what you thought you'd be.
Right.
And I haven't seen all of his movies because, you know, at some level they're kind of for 14-year-old boys. And so, mm-hmm. but in the beginning I would go to see the Conans and, and that was surreal. To see him make love to Sandel Bergman was like, okay, this doesn't feel good. This is just weird.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah. Do you think Arnold would have been surprised if you would have told him when he was younger that this was the fame he was going to achieve later on in life? I know he thought big, but do you think even he would have been shocked at that amount of fame?
Yeah. How do you know that?
Yeah.
How can you know that you're going to be the highest paid action actor and the real estate piled up on itself and then to marry a Kennedy and then to have, you know, become governor of California.
Right.
No, it would. Now, he did tell me, and you know this from the book, but like about 10 years before he actually won the governorship, he dropped that on me once at lunch in Santa Monica. It's like, well, you just wait. I will be governor of California. It's like, no, you're not saying that.
Right.
I mean, that I couldn't believe.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't believe that he actually got it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've talked to a couple of bodybuilders who said, like, back in 68, 69, they were walking down the beach with him, and he said that. He said he was going to be a movie star, and then he was going to be a governor.
Well, yeah, and sometimes people have said, even president, well, you can't be president, not right. when you're, you know, born in this country. But, yeah, I know people have told me that, but he didn't tell me the governor thing until, oh, gosh. I don't know. It was one of the years we met for lunch, and so I don't even know what year, but.
Yeah.
Because when did he become governor? Like 2003
or something? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was like 1993.
Okay. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, he's a fascinating individual, the way he's always used his drive and he's thought so far ahead. He's, you know, been so positive. And I think that's why he's so motivating for millions and millions of people around the world.
Yeah, and I mean, some people are really disappointed in him for the mistake he made in his marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But still in all, I mean, you know, I follow some of the bodybuilding sites, and even when somebody posted about, oh my God, I just read this incredible book, Arnold and Me, mm-hmm. but somebody I noticed posted like, yeah, I don't like him anymore. He disappointed me. And it's like, okay, well, everybody has their right.
Yeah.
And certainly that's been not a fatal flaw, but certainly a deep, deep flaw in him.
Yeah. 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 But I'm surprised even with that, it seems like people have kind of gotten over that. It wasn't the fatal flaw I thought it would be when it happened.
No, no. I mean, it was to the end of his marriage, but he's a very good parent to, what is his name? Lewis, maybe. And,
Joseph. Yeah.
So maybe that's like softened people. Like, well, he's a good father.
Right, right. He took ownership of his mistake. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Not immediately, but when he got busted, you know.
Yeah, right. All right, Barbara. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you, and this is the book for all of you out there who want to buy it. It was a great book. I'm glad I still got it. And I just read it again over the weekend. So great job on that book. And thank you for joining us, Barbara. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I loved your stories and I loved your book.
Thank you, John. Thank you. And hi to all the bodybuilders out there. Okay. All the legends.
All right. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Barbara. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank Barbara Outland Baker for joining us. You guys can check out her book, Arnold and Me. It's available on Amazon.com. I think it was published in 2006, but it's still a great read. I read it again over the weekend before I interviewed Barbara. So it's really some great insight into Arnold. So check that out if you're an Arnold Schwarzenegger fan. And I also want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you again to all our Patreon donors. If you guys are interested in helping sponsor the website, you can go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, which is our official website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for Patreon donors. You can contribute as little as $5 a month if you would wish to. Thank you. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Stay safe out there, everybody. I hope you guys are having great workouts. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care.